Welcome to Trapping Across America, where fur brothers meet every week. Where we're still allowed to be men, and we're proud to be from the land of the fur and the home of the brave. Welcome to Trapping Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear, for Trapping Across America. We have another show today where I'm going to be talking about some of the states that I've trapped in, some of the lessons I've learned there. And I'm doing this from the lure shop today. And if you're not a trapper and you happen to be around Dunlap, you can probably smell it. With all the open winter we've had just continuously this winter, so many more guys are getting to trap a lot later, and they're buying a lot more lure, and I'm sure the other lure makers in the same situation that I'm in, that you're just wide open in production, just trying to keep up with the meat. And I do appreciate your guys that are trusting me with your lure needs, because it's been a really good year for that. But at the same time, like I said a little bit last week, if you're holding coon, you need to get rid of them, because I keep hearing more and more fur buyers and trappers where they're trying to sell as coon as quick as they can put it up from week to week, and the price of that is going down. So if you've got the coon, you need to dump them, because in 3 weeks they're probably going to be less than they are right now. And I hate to give money value on that, just for the simple fact that, you know, someone in Minnesota and someone in Arkansas is going to be such a huge difference between the two right there, that trying to explain some of the numbers I've seen have been all over the board. But most of it right now is based off the speculation that there is just hundreds of thousands of coon caught more this year than there was in the last few years because of our winter being so gentle. Now, I'm getting ready to be, starting on the 4th of February, at the Harrisburg, PA Outdoor Show. And if anybody lives around there and you're going to be coming up there, I don't have my booth number, and which would be helpful if you've never been to that show, because it is massive. And for most people that I never get to walk, I've only been there once, but I never got to walk around, but they say it takes like 2 days just to see it all if you're really hustling. So it is a big show. Now, where I'm going to be at is, if you look on one of the maps there, you'll see where they have an archery arena where there's more archery stuff. I'll be in the hall just outside of that on a corner, and that's where I'll be set up, and you'll see the flat screens and all the pictures. Will be kind of hard to miss. And normally, because of all the pictures and a lot of people who never been around someone that's really trapped that hard, they're just an absolutely amazed at how many animals are on some of these pictures. Which brings up a good point. Doing stuff like this, even if you're doing it for your state, it's really educational to people, because most people have a hard time understanding that there's more than two bobcats in the state, or more than a handful of beaver, or raccoons are almost extinct. They hear all kind of crazy stuff from other people that they just don't know what's out there. And so when they talk to someone that deals with wildlife all the time, you'll find out, if you put yourself across in a very professional, gentle, helpful mode to them, you can build allies to it. You know, they may not want to go trapping, but if someone's asking them to vote on something, they may look at it a little bit different than they would before. Because a lot, like even here where I used to trap in Marin County, I would literally have people just throw a hissy fit at me because I was catching so many beaver and caused them to go extinct. Or they would see 30 in the back of the truck and thought I killed everyone in the whole county with that one day's catch. And they just had no comprehension. Within 5 miles of where they were at, there was probably 300 or 400 beaver just right in a 5 mile area. So if they don't know, they don't know. And one of the things we can do as an educated trapping and educated trapping industry is to help educate those people. Like I said, if you're going to be up at the PA show, I'd love to see you. I'm going to be around a lot of non-trappers, a lot of great sportsmen up there, hunters and such, but it makes my day go a little bit better when I can actually talk to my brothers, the trappers out there, because I speak your language a little bit more than I do deer hunters. What I want to talk about today is, like, I'm going to continue on till I run out of the states I've trapped in. because there's a lot of neat things to learn from every one of them, is I'm going to start with Louisiana today. And the reason that I think that's so important, because it's either the 1st of February or whatever it is when I'm shooting this. This is Wednesday, before you hear this on the internet. It is 63 degrees in Tennessee. It is drizzling. I have clover coming up in my yard. There are stuff trying to bud. It smells like spring, feels like spring. And when you have that much humidity in the air and in the ground, because we've just been getting rain after rain after rain, it smells like Louisiana. Damp earth, a lot of greenery, a lot of water. And it just, when I woke up this morning, walked outside loading the van for PA, I mean, if I'd have closed my eyes, I would have thought I'd have been in middle Louisiana in February or March. It's amazing. Now, if you've never been to Louisiana, I'm gonna start this off with some of their laws, and I'm gonna go into some very neat attributes about Louisiana. The only two laws in Louisiana is a 24-hour check and no teeth no jaws with teeth in them. That is pretty much it. When I first went down to Louisiana doing bounty control for a parish, doesn't that just sound sexy? I mean, everything in Louisiana sounds, just rolls off the tongue. You don't go work for the county. You go work for the parish. You don't go to the beaver swamp. You go to the bayou. And everything about Louisiana to me is just really neat when it comes to that. But I was working for this parish down there, and I went down there, and I had to, it was not a bounty system like a lot that you get in certain states. You had to go interview, send a application about, you know, what you've done and where you've trapped for, and have references. And then their police jury, which is what most people would call a county commission, would vote on it and say yay or nay. And they only allowed, you know, four or five people to be on this bounty system, trying to keep fraud out of it. So I sent that in, and I went down there, and I stopped by Walmart to get the regulation book, and they handed me a piece of yellow paper that was not even an 8x10 folded over in half. And the first page that you saw on the front was just pretty much trapping regulations for Louisiana, with a picture of an otter or a beaver or something like that on the front of it. And I'm looking at it going, no. I need the regulations, the trapping regulations. He said, that's it. So I take that back out to the truck, and I'm flipping through it. And, you know, besides 24-hour check and no teeth, that was all I could find. You know, you need to have permission. And that was it. There's a few things in there about live market. Well, I just couldn't believe that's all there was. So I looked up a game warden there in the parish I was working at, and called him and asked if I could come over and talk about the trapping. I was going to be trapping for the parish. He said, sure, come on over. Went to his living room, and I explained why I was there. And he goes, well, let's find out what all the rules actually are, because, it, you know, that's just not something he's really concerned himself with. He pulls out a book that was 3.5 inches thick, and I'm like, oh, here we go. So I pull up my little notebook to make sure I don't get in trouble. And he starts going, ah, that don't pertain to you, that don't pertain to you. You doing live market? No, sir, this don't pertain to you. This section doesn't pertain to you. This went on and on and on. After about 20 minutes of him going through that book real quick, he kind of looked at me and said, yep, that's it. No teeth, 24-hour check. And this is what he told me, which absolutely cracked me up. He said, since you're working for the parish, we don't care if you use teeth because you're considered control. So you don't have that law. And since you're working for the parish, we really don't care if you check them every 24 hours. We would just appreciate it if you do it in front of people if they're going to see an animal in a trap more than 24 hours. And this is how I knew that this was such a good state to trap in. Besides, it had actual freedom-based trapping regs, if you can believe that. And someone that's in Pennsylvania and New York and all these other half-communist states, I'm sure you're having a hard time believing that. They don't have issues down there. They just don't. Trapping is part of their culture in Louisiana, actually way more than it is up north. It's just been that way. The whole state is based around utilizing wildlife, and that is such a strange concept in the country that we live today. They actually believe that the wildlife and the land is there to produce for the people. It's not like that in Tennessee. It's not like that in most places I go to. They almost treat it like a criminal if you want to harvest the overabundance of wildlife out there and help keep everything in check. But in Louisiana, it's a lot different that way. The only thing he said, basically, you know, and I'm sure you could get some peckerhead game wardens in different places of Louisiana, I guess, wherever you go. He said, as long as I don't have any calls or problems with you, you just do whatever you need to do to help us with the beaver problems we have. And that's the absolute truth. I mean, I never once had a game warden stop me. I saw them all the time going up and down the road. Never once did they stop, ask a question. They would wave. They'd see me pull off the side of the road. You know, because I wasn't bothering anything in their minds or hurting anything. I wasn't a criminal because I was trying to, you know, get a little bit of the abundant wildlife that was there. There was no problems. And if you're looking for a safe haven to go trap like that, you know, Louisiana and probably Texas are the only two options you've got left in the country, to be honest with you. They just really don't care. And they want you there, which is another big thing. I've called into Alabama getting my out-of-state license, and I've had the lady on the phone basically tell me verbatim they didn't want me in their state trapping. And I basically told her I didn't give a damn what she wanted. It was legal. I needed a license. But that's the difference between some states and Louisiana. So if you're looking for somewhere, Louisiana is a great state. Another advantage, even though you don't have a legal 48, 72-hour trap check law like you do in Arkansas, another really huge advantage of Louisiana is road trapping is very legal. And they're very lenient on that. If you're trapping beaver and coons and otter around there and you get off a little bit past the fence or whatever, or you're not really sure where the line is, I never once had a landowner complain. I've had a few stop, ask me what I was doing. They said basically kill them all. I hate those SOBs. And that was the end of the story. And that was just the world that you're in down there. So it's a really good place to go trap. And by having the road trapping laws that you have in Louisiana, unless they've changed something I don't know about, that means you've got the whole state to go anywhere and trap as much fur as you got the intestinal fortitude to set the steel for. That's what that really means. That means it's bring what you brought, and hopefully you bring enough. And when I was down there, because there's so much water in the places I was at, I wasn't actually in the Delta country of Louisiana where I trapped, but I was just over from it. And I'm going to go into why I think that's a little bit better than going to the pure Delta country here in a second. But it allowed me to run hundreds of otter traps and beaver traps in a 24-hour period. And leaving, especially when you first get down there, even if you think you need to leave the traps more than 24 hours but get a bigger catch, you probably won't be able to skin it. If you get on a river system there and you want to get off of the roads, which is a if you want to go be an absolute hero for pitchers or for whatever reasons, and you want to go beaver snaring somewhere and just catch a tractor trailer load of beaver, go to some of those rivers down there. Part of the bounty system I was doing, it was based off of payment from the taxes to help keep the roads clear. They didn't want me going to the river, but after the second year I was down there, I just couldn't stand it. So a friend I was with, we took his boat out, and I set about 40 snares and probably 2 miles on the river down there. Came back the next day and was pulling them, and we had 27 beaver in the boat out of 40 snares in a 2 mile period. And I'm talking, I wasn't putting hardly any effort. He'd just pull up, I'd put the kill pole in next to the slide, open the loop, throw some lure back here, and that's all I was doing. I was dumbfounded at how big the beaver were and how many that were there. But if you're gonna trap in a river system like in Louisiana, and I'm sure part of Mississippi, you get a tremendous amount of silting, and you can't see into the water like I can here or you can in other places. So you've got to be very careful. It's best if you have some form of what do you call those things you put in the boat, a radar type thing that you can see how many feet the water is. And to get to the banks, a lot of times you'll have to pole yourself. But the downside of the rivers in Louisiana is if it rains, because they're countersunk really bad because it's soft soil, it's great fertile soil. But because of that, when they get these floods, it digs the water system down into the ground even more and more and more. So a lot of these places will have your, when you do a boat ramp there where I was going in, I bet it was 70 feet down from the road up top to get to the water. And when you get a big flood, the water will be over the boat ramp. So you can imagine what that means. So you really got to pay attention to the weather when you get into Louisiana, or you may not see your equipment for 3 weeks or a month or 2 months. And that's not uncommon by trappers. You'll find out that most guys down there that do a lot of trapping have two or three sets of equipment because they know over the course of the winter they're not going to see a set of that for a couple of months probably. It's not like that up on the dry land. It'll flood and then the water run off pretty quick, and it's really not that bad. It's not anything like I've got to deal around here with the mountains and all the water that's on the mountains got to get down off the mountains and down in the valleys. It's not at all like that when you get to Louisiana. The water will clear off for you. You have, like I said, a tremendous beaver population in some places. You have a really good coon population everywhere I've been in Louisiana. Now the coon there are a little bit smaller, but there's a lot of them, and they've got pretty good colored fur, at least on the ones on the eastern side of Louisiana where I trapped. They had pretty good fur. There wasn't a whole lot of yellow ones, and they weren't as big. You'd probably, you know, you're going to be 29, 30 inches when you stretch them on your average size. You'll get a few big ones, not very many. You'll have a whole lot of 29s and 27s. So just keep that in mind. The good part about Louisiana, for all y'all guys that live in these states that want to treat bobcats like they're some form of, you know, a massive big game trophy, or, you know, the nature Nazis are worried that someone's going to actually kill one of them so they don't want to have a season. There's a lot of cats in Louisiana. Lots of cats. You can catch them under bridges. You can catch them going through culverts. You can catch them in the fields. You can catch them in the woods. You can catch cats pretty much damn near everywhere. There's just cats everywhere. The range you're going to get on those cats based off this year, it's going to be in the $20 range to the $150 range. And it's probably going to be more in the $70 to $80 range this year on what you could get on those cats. So keep that in mind. You know, commercial cats are doing pretty good this year. A lot of years you're going to be looking, or, you know, probably an average over a decade or so, you're probably looking at $30, $40 cats. So they're not the best cats. They're not the biggest cats. But maybe one out of every 10 or 15 is going to be a sure enough, very spotted, nice belly, white, wide, and it looks really good. So those cats down there can do you very well. In certain places, you've got to deal with nutria. Nutria can be a pain in the butt when you're trying to otter and beaver trap. I don't really know of any market for that brings more than a couple of dollars, and they make very good bobcat baits. That's pretty much what mine has always went towards. But if you start running into a lot of nutria, you need to start setting a whole lot more traps to get those cleared out, because they're just like water possums. And on land, the water possums or the land possums are really possums, and I've never in my life seen a place with so much wildlife in it like Louisiana. And I bet you the possum population has got to be a couple of thousand per square mile. It is unbelievable. So if you get really frustrated because you catch possums in a fox or coyote or cat set, Louisiana is not the place for you. And you probably need to set several traps in one area to try to get the possums out of the way, because I'm not exaggerating on that part. They got the possums. And then since they don't get really cold weather, drizzly days like it is today, you're going to be loaded with them. And if it's above freezing and you get some mist at night, you just plan on it that you're going to run about 50% of your traps are going to have possums in it. That's just the way it is. Another cool thing about Louisiana is they have a very strong live market. It swings back and forth if the guys want to let you use footholds or just snares. But the snares down there are not that big a deal if you're going to go to live market side, because there's so much cover. It is thick. It is, a lot of times it's like a jungle. even around the farms and the fish ponds, once you get out of the manicured part of that, how they're coming and going. There's a lot of trails there, and you can really catch a lot of coyotes. And the Louisiana is not one of those states yet that's been overran with trappers there that do the live market, so there's not as many games being played as you're going to find in Mississippi and in Georgia and North Carolina and stuff like that. It's a, you know, it's pretty much somebody go, well, I could take 50 or 60 of them, and you go get them, and they'll pay you. It's been a lot different there than it has been anywhere else. There's a lot of pens there spread all over the state that allows you to have a good market without having to drive too far. I would do some research. You know, you got to get some extra, some license and stuff from the state to be able to do that. And if you're going to keep them longer in a certain period, you've got to, you know, make sure your cages are certain standards and things like that. But if you're just selling them as you catch them, it's really no big deal. And it's, like I said, it's a very user-friendly state. Now, if you're like most people and you're going to go somewhere, you may not think this is a big deal. But after you go to Louisiana, it will be a big deal to you. You want to know what fast food is in Louisiana? In between stops, my favorite thing to do is I'd pull over to one of these several shacks that I would see. And when I say shacks, I mean they look like put together, someone just built a screened-in porch with nothing else and a few boards holding up to try to keep some of the wind out of it. You pull up to the front and you tell them you want so many pounds of crawfish. In 2 minutes, they're handing you this bag and you're going down the road. And you're eating tail and throwing it out the window, going to your next set. Much, much better than McDonald's. You know, and it's so much better than the peanut butter and jelly sandwich that you're trying to save a little bit of money on. Because down there, it's not that expensive. And you'll find a lot of places down there where the locals eat. And just kind of ask around where they do eat, because it is some of the best food that you'll ever get in your life, and it's there on an everyday basis. And if you go to where the locals go, and it's not a tourist trap, it's really not that expensive, because that's just the way those folks eat down there. There are some dangers when it comes to Louisiana. If you're afraid of snakes, you know, you're going to have to steel your spine a little bit on that, because you're going to come across a lot of snakes. And it don't matter what time of the year it is. If that sun comes out and that temperature gets up, they're going to start moving around. And there's something about a big blunt tail water moccasin. If you don't know what that is, that's what you call a water moccasin. It's big. I mean, they got a neck on them like a big bull. And the reason they call them blunt tips because they're so fat, they don't even really go down to the point on their tail. They just kind of blunt it off. And they seem to be very mad at the world. And especially during the trapping season, they seem to be right at that stage where they can get out and move around and want a sun, but they're just pissed off. They can't move around and do what they want to do. And they're very aggressive at that time. If you're really worried about it, you know, you can get carry a shotgun or a judge from Taurus with the 410s or whatever. What I carried down there was a 22 Magnum 8-shot revolver ultralight pistol. It's got like a 2-inch barrel or something. And I would get rat shot. And if the snakes wouldn't leave me alone and wouldn't go about their business, then I would take care of it. Now, the rat shot may not necessarily kill all the snakes, but trust me, when you shoot one in the head with it, they're not worried about you any longer, and you can go about your business. I'm not going down there snake hunting when I go to Louisiana. But saying that, I went through cases of rat shot. My wife went down there with me, and she flew in for, I was trapping real late in the year, and it was getting close to Easter, and we was going to go have a traditional Cajun Easter dinner with crawfish et affete down in Baton Rouge with some people we were staying with. She flew in. So we went out to check traps for a couple of days. And the first place we got off of, we get load the four-wheeler. We're going through all this CRP ground. And Cindy looks up and goes, what are all those snakes doing? Well, I've never even noticed it. But in those CRP trees, they're about 20 feet tall. And almost every one of them had a black snake, and I couldn't tell from that distance if they were water moccasins, but they were just kind of facing up towards the sky with their mouth open, almost like they were sun worshiping. And when you saw one, then you saw three, then you saw 50, then you saw 100, and I'm sure if you could go over that CRP field, there'd be 1,000. they didn't bother you for whatever it is they were doing, but what they did do, it made my wife a little nervous. And me being a guy, and me being around snakes a lot, you know, it didn't really affect me like it did her. So we're going out on this four-wheeler trail, and we come to a beaver swamp, and there's a beaver house that's about 20 feet from the bank, and it's a big one. It's probably 14, 15 foot wide, 6, 8 feet tall, and it was a good sunny day. It was probably 65 degrees, bluebird day, and, you know, she was still talking about those snakes, and I said, well, watch this, and I, because she's like, are you going to go over to the beaver house? I'm like, no, and I said, watch this. So I pick up a stick, I sling it at the beaver house, it's about 20 foot away, and it hits it. And then I wasn't expecting to see what I saw and the volume I did, but it looked like something out of Indiana Jones where the snakes start coming off that thing and just falling down in the water. Well, I turn around and my poor wife is standing on the four-wheeler. I couldn't get her feet to touch the ground in the woods anymore after that time. She would stay in the truck. She wouldn't get out. So if you're going to take a significant other and she's afraid of snakes, you know, kind of insulate her from not doing stuff like that that us guys think's cool. To watch a free Indiana Jones show. So you have to be aware is a good way to put it. You need to be aware of the snakes. There's no need to be deathly afraid of the snakes. Everybody thinks if a water moccasin kills you, you'll die. That's not the case. I talked to the doctors down there because I was wanting to take my dog and they suggested against it. There's not even a serum that they give a person. They pretty much tell you, you know, get some rest, drink lots of water. You're going to hurt for a few days. You're going to swell up. It's going to turn green and purple and blue. And then 3 or 4 weeks later, it's not going to hurt you anymore. And that's what they tell you. So it's not like they're going to kill you if they bite you. And most of the people that live down there maybe get bit once or twice. The old trapper that I hung out with down there a little bit, Montrell Valentine, he's been like 4 times. And he's been a commercial fisherman, a commercial turtleman, and a professional trapper for private and for the state for like 50 or 60 years. So 40 times out of 60 years, pretty good odds. So I wouldn't get too wrapped up about it. The other part about Louisiana that you need to be aware of that sounds really cool till you come upon the situation is when it rains and you get more current in the water than's normally there and you start flooding out some of the bottoms, your beaver and otter traps will start connecting with alligators. Most of the time, those alligators are just in the, you know, 3 to 5 foot range. They're not that bad. I don't know how an alligator works, but even though when they're under the water and they can't seem to get to the top, they don't seem to die either. They're not very fast at that time of the year, being oxygen depleted. I'm sure has a little bit to do with it. The reason I'm telling you this is, if you're coming from somewhere like PA or New York, and you're used to just running your hand down there to feel the top of the conibear to see if it's set or not, or if you've got an animal, don't do that in Louisiana. Because you may be drawing a nub back, I assume. You know, I've never been bit by one. I've never had one really act like they were going to eat me. But I wouldn't feel comfortable running my hands down there. And I've had a few times where I pull up the trap and I'm, you know, waist deep in the water and I'm face to face with a 5 foot alligator. In my heart about comes out the top of my head and I about piss all over myself. That's just a fact of life in Louisiana. Pay attention to that. If it starts warming up and you're from a northern state and you've never really done trapping in warm weather, turtles will start walking on the bottom too and you'll start catching them in those traps. And a big 30-pound snapping turtle will put the whammy on you if you just run your hand down through there. I'm not saying this to scare anybody from Louisiana. It's just the reality of being in Louisiana. It's a wild place. Louisiana is still a wild place. And some of the game down there will let you know that you're not always, you know, top of the food chain per se, because they can still take a bite out of you too. But why would someone go to Louisiana, in my opinion? Well, me, it would be because of the real lax laws. If you use common sense and you're a respectable trapper, you can get unlimited land down there. When I was working for the parish, this is not exaggeration, this is the truth. This happened to me 2 different times when I was in Louisiana. I'm going down the road. I don't drive with my hair on fire. I'm pretty good about obeying the speed limits or staying a little bit under there. So I'm kind of putting around doing my thing going down the road, because when you have out-of-state tags in a different area, you know, you just don't want to draw attention to yourself. Twice I've had state troopers blue light me and pull me over. And then, you know, I'm trying to figure out, you know, my taillight's broken, something fell out, someone's pissed off about what I'm doing, whatever it could be. And the state troopers come up and they ask me if I'm Clint Locklear and I'm the guy catching beaver, and I go, yes, sir. And they start writing out a ticket, and it's not a ticket. What it is, it's a judge or a commissioner or something like that that wanted to find you, the trapper, for you to come out and trap for them. And it's like that all over the place. You do a good job for one of those farmers down there, you don't need for land. Actually, you're going to have to start hiding from landowners. So if you're looking for a place to go that has that kind of potential, with that much property, with that nice laws, Louisiana is just hard to beat. Super people, super laws, awesome food, and you have never seen the amount of wildlife that you'll see down there. Now right now, with the otter prices the way they're going, which would be the reason most people would want to go to Louisiana, there is at least for the next 2 or 3 years before all the local guys get geared back up and the prices stay around $100, there's a really good population of otter down there. And it's kind of funny, on the eastern side they're a little more pale. When you get on the western side and more of the pine forest, they're a little darker. I've never trapped on the western side over there. I know a lot of guys over there, or a few guys that catch over 100 otter a year, 50, 60 when they're trying not to. Same on the eastern side. Now the reason I said you don't want to, the Delta country is a little bit different in Louisiana. If you've never seen, and you ought to Google this before you go down there to understand what I'm saying, you have a levee that goes down the Mississippi River. That is a big levee. It goes all the way from the top of the state to the bottom of the state. Water doesn't flow in and out of that levee, therefore it wouldn't be a levee. If they need to let water flow in and out, they've got these big gates. So if you get right on the Delta side, and you're on the inland side of Louisiana, which would be the western side of the levee, there's not a lot of water right there because the levee system has blocked it off. So you don't have flowing water right there. So you're not going to have a tremendous amount. But if you can find some landowners that have hunting clubs that are on the eastern side, and some of those have buildings and places to stay, if you can, we call them dump ponds in Louisiana. If you can get on the eastern side of that levee, you're in the absolute trapping paradise. You've got all the otter and beaver and everything else coming off the Mississippi River, and they stay between the levee and the main river. The catch of that is you've got to ask the locals what the feet measurement is on the Mississippi River, because once it gets over the bank of the Mississippi River and it traps you between the Mississippi River and the levee, you're out of business, because sometimes the water will be 8-10 foot deep all the way across where you used to be riding your four-wheeler or in a canoe or walking. So you have to keep that in mind. It seems like the better places you can go have some very weird things you have to pay attention to, or you'll get trapped there. And I've had the same thing happen to me in Mississippi. But the otter population is good because you can run so many roads. And if you go road trapping in Louisiana, if it's water and it's 6 inches deep and it's flowing and it's 2 foot wide, stop and put a trap in it. That may be a 5 or 6 otter creek over a course of 2 or 3 weeks. So if there's water there and it's going from somewhere and to somewhere, stop and put a trap in it. You can block them down with 330s. You can use footholds in those shallow creeks. Another good thing about Louisiana, at least where I was at, which was just south of Interstate 20, is the way the water floods and the sand and the loam and all that. Most of the time, even on water that was 20 foot wide, there was a way to block down a creek with a 330 that wide because the way the sandbars and the vegetation would grow. So you may have to put 2 or 3 conibears in a couple of different places to block those creeks down. But when you get in a lot of other areas of the country and you've got that big of water, there's no way to block them down without going to where they're coming out of the water at. So that's one of the huge advantages about Louisiana, at least that I saw. And a lot of times the levees aren't that deep. you know, you've got to test them. You know, you just don't walk out into one. You know, you test to make sure that there's a bottom to it, and then you're not going to be over your head. But a lot of times it may be 25 foot wide and it's only 18 inches deep. You can work with that if you use some wire and stuff like that, and some junk to get your stuff set up on. But if you're looking for a place to go, think about Louisiana. Now the fish ponds, a lot of people get fired up on the fish ponds and crawfish ponds. If you can get on those, you'll do very well. But you know, the fish ponds are set up a lot different from the crawfish ponds. The fish ponds are set up for people to drive around them all the time, which is good for you, the trapper. The bad part of it is they keep them cut, the grass cut very low where the pond is, going off to where their creek they pump the water in and out of at. So yeah, you may be able to see a trail, but the grass next to it's only a half inch tall. So that can cause you some problems. And if you ever get around somewhere that's got these ponds, I'm going to give you some advice here that'll save you a tremendous amount of headache when it comes to otter. The first things you need to set up is, how are the otter going to escape after you catch one or two of them? So instead of going to the classic crossover where they're coming out of one of these drainage ditches into these ponds, all this catfish, and you set that up, that is the last place you want to set up on one of these fish farms. Where you want to set up first is try to figure out three or four different areas to block the creek, north and south or east and west, however the water's going, from those ponds, that you can block those up with your traps. And if you do that, then you go inside the fish ponds, because there's otter in there, and you smack one or two of them. What's going to happen is, instead of catching one or two and thinking you did really good, when you go look at your traps that block off their escape routes, now you may have 6, 8, or 10. That's how you get the big numbers of otter. But if you just go set the crossovers over, because it's easy, and you don't take the time to set up their escape routes, you're going to have a lot of otter that'll see someone get caught and then leave. And if you don't have something set up for them, they may not come back while you're down there. Otters do seem to have some intelligence about being trapped. And by knowing how they're going to react, and their first thing of reaction when someone gets caught is they swim around trying to figure out what's going on. And then when their little bitty brains go, this is not a very safe place to be, they go to parts unknown and may not come back for several weeks or several months. If you have another family group come through, you know, you may get lucky. But when I trap those ponds, their escape routes are the most important part of that, in my opinion, of catching a lot of otter down in Louisiana. Well, the next place, I was going to talk about Mississippi, but it'd be kind of the same, so we'll spread this out a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about New Mexico at the end of this show. New Mexico is another one of those places that I like it because it's got awesome food. Just like Louisiana, but different. Awesome food. The best restaurants to go in, as you can tell, it means a lot to me. The best restaurants you can go into in New Mexico are the ones that no one speaks English and you can't read the menu because it's in Spanish. You just communicate the best you can and eat whatever they bring you, and you're probably going to be very, very happy. New Mexican food and Mexican food are two different things. If you don't like spicy stuff, you may have a hard time in New Mexico if you can't communicate, because they are not afraid to throw the heat. But the trapping in New Mexico is super varied, and the only way I can give you my advice on New Mexico is tell you where I've been and what I noticed while I was there. When me and Ed went out to New Mexico, there's a high desert just on the western side of Las Cruces. And that's where we ran pretty much all of our cow lines out of. And it's all BLM land, so you don't have to have permission. You get a little permit, your out-of-state license there is about $250. They do have more laws in New Mexico. You've got the 24-hour check, if I remember right, you've got a jaw spread limit. Your traps have to be offset in the game wardens. At least when I was out there, as long as you had a piece of number 9 wire wired around one of your jaws to keep them from closing, you were good to go. From memory, I think that's one of the states you have to have a trap tag number instead of a regular trap tag, like you would here in Tennessee with your name, address, and all that stuff on there. They just go off of numbers. You have to have a catch pole in the vehicle. And, you know, if you're going to be on private ground, you got to have permission. The biggest thing there is the 24-hour check, having the offset and the catch pole. We got stopped by two game wardens in New Mexico, and they were some of the nicest game wardens I've ever been out in the field. There was never the pretense that we were doing something wrong. They saw the coolers and boxes and asked to look into them. When they realized that we were trapping, they were trying to take us in the best directions for more fur and cats. And, you know, they actually, both game wardens and when we left after tagging our cats, the state of New Mexico said, thank you for coming down and helping with our predator problem. I mean, amazing state as far as that goes. Now, where we were at around Las Cruces, which is more of a southern part of New Mexico, we didn't know it when we went in there, but there's not a lot of cats. So if you're going after cats, that high desert I'm talking about may not be the best place to go. But if you're wanting somewhere to go on a coyote adventure, Lord have mercy, is that fun. Because you've got almost beach sand. It doesn't rain. It gets down in the 20s and 30s at night. You'll be in a t-shirt by 10 o'clock in the afternoon. You don't have to worry about permission. We had a 180-mile line trap line out and never got off the same ranch. And we didn't have to ask him permission anyway. We met him later and talked to him, and they didn't care that we were there. It's pretty flat when you get up on top of these high deserts like that. The sand, you can literally, well, you got the soft sand, to dig a trap bed, you just scoop the sand out with your hand. You bed the trap, have your peat moss or your underall or whatever you're going to use. You don't even need a sifter most of the time. You just push the sand back over the top. You know, you can dig a large dirt hole in the side of those mesquite dunes in just a second. I mean, a big hole, 8-10 inches round, 2 foot deep. And believe it or not, in that soft sand, disposable stakes work very well. I was very nervous of that. I wasn't using drags at that point in my trapping like I do now. And I'm not sure I would then either, just because it was so easy to put them in. And then when 3 or 4 shovels going down, you can pull them back out. But we never had a coyote pull out one of those stakes. Now the coyotes, the farther west you get, are going to be smaller. So they're not going to have the force that if you're from the east, you're used to seeing a great big randy 40 or 50 pound coyote put on a stake in a trap. They're just, you know, they're not that big. You know, a big coyote in New Mexico is probably 25 pounds. A really big one would be 30. And if you ever got a 40 pounder out there, it'd be in the newspaper. It's just a different world as far as your coyote size goes. But you can go to your BLM offices, and there's one in Las Cruces there, and that you can buy these maps, or, you know, they charge you for basically the paper, and you can see where you want to go, and you can line all that out, and you just go trapping, man. You just wear it out as fast and as hard or as slow and as fun as you want to make it. You can go out there and have a good time. And off in the distances, everywhere you see, you're going to see some of the most majestic mountain scenes that you have ever seen in your life. Seeing that at dusk and dawn with no humidity and the colors, the mountains look blue. I mean, it's not anything like I'm used to seeing anywhere else I go. And it's just a plain good time. And where we stayed when we went to New Mexico, there's a lot of these little towns when you get out west. They're not like Las Cruces, and they're not the suburbs of Las Cruces. This could be any town up there we found. But when you get out about 10 miles from those, you start running these little bitty towns that are about 4 blocks long. And there's not a lot of private ground in New Mexico. Well, every one of those little towns has what we call a boss dog. Well, you go find out who the boss dog was. And where we stayed at, the guy's name was Kino. So we found a house that he owned everything, pretty much. And we found a little old junky house that he had, and we paid $300 for I think it was a month or 3 weeks or something. We stayed out there at his place. We had to go turn the power on. You know, that took about a day of our time getting the water turned on and all that. And it really wasn't that bad. And it was nice. Of course, it's not furnished. We're sleeping on the floor. We had a stove, we had a sink, we had a shower. And then he let us use part of his cotton gin there to put our fur up in. So that worked out very well. And a lot of those places are really sucking as far as the economy goes. You can probably find a roach motel somewhere to stay pretty cheap, but it's not somewhere you'd ever want to take your wife or children. And you may want to de-louse and debug before you get home from them, But it's a pretty cheap place to stay, and that's just part of trapping. That's part of what makes going out of state sometimes, after the fact, pretty funny. But anywhere in the state of New Mexico, you can go and pretty much trap because it's BLM property. After we left the high desert part of New Mexico, we went up to Lincoln National Forest, which would be northeast of there, probably about 2.5 hours, and you can go from 5,000 feet at the desert floor to 10,000 feet at the top of that national park in about 40 minutes. So it's very drastic in the difference. Up top there's snow, down at the bottom at 60 degrees. The animals we caught up there were a lot better quality, but here's what I want everybody to know that's thinking about going to New Mexico and want to run to the mountains. You may be able to be better off if you're thinking about coyotes to stay in the desert floor, because you can catch 10 times as many coyotes, even though they're worth half as much as the ones on the mountain, because it's easier trapping, it's easier traveling. You don't have the weather to deal with. You're not having elk snapping your stuff off. You're not having to look behind every brush and tree because you see, you know, 20 sets of mountain tracks in the fresh snow every day. And every Tom, Dick, and Harry in New Mexico knows that cats out there are bringing $400 to $700, and they're setting traps on every one of these side roads out through there. Now, if you want to get in there and get it with it, like we did, you know, knock yourself out. But you're not going to catch the numbers, because that's where everybody goes in New Mexico seems to trap. And I'm sure it's the same way at Gila or a lot of the other big, well-known cat factories in New Mexico. You can still go catch quite a few cats. But, you know, one thing that you're going to have to wrap your mind around, if you're from the East and are used to being more mechanized like I am, the really good cat trapping in a lot of places when you get out in New Mexico or even Arizona from being out there on the Navajo Reservation, you're going to have to walk to get to the good cat locations. So it's, you're not going to get as much stuff out as you would if you're going to trap like I do in Texas or I do in Missouri or Tennessee or somewhere, because you've got to go to where the cats are at, and they're more precise when you start getting out there. And if you're going to go to these big national forests, plan on walking in a little bit to get away from all the guys that are trying to road trap. Because there ain't a much alive around those roads after the first couple of weeks of season out there. We learned that the hard way. The ground is not very good to deal with. Staking is a pain. Johnny Thorpe's, you know, fence staple on the end of a chain makes a whole lot more sense out there than I've ever seen it anywhere that I've trapped, if you're going to try to trap in the mountains or use drags. But the weather, you know, you can be up there and get 3 or 4 foot of snow. So you need to try to keep that in mind. But New Mexico, they have fair laws. They have great food. They have unlimited land. If you don't like this million acres of BLM land you're playing on, go to the next one. That's what trappers should be looking for. And there's still private ranches there that if you talk to them, you can get on there and trap them. I'm not sure that's really necessary in New Mexico because there's so much ground. Now, from a coyote point of view, which is what we mostly went out there for, you know, we're catching 7-8 a piece a day. Well, me and Ed went out there. We was getting about $35, $40 for those coyotes. We brought them back home and sold them. So we were doing okay on the money side. We caught some $400 cats. You know, we caught some gray fox, some badgers, ringtails, swift fox. So we had a nice collection of fur when we come back. But what we noticed, if you're not in the mountains, you want to stay to the wimpy side of trapping. And what I mean by that is, what we noticed is the better the ground was, the more the animals were. Because you can be driving along and you've got this almost like beach sand and there's sand dunes where it's built up against a mesquite and you see tracks everywhere. That's where you want to trap. You can go down the road 20 miles and you'll start hitting this really hard ground. It's almost like a gray looking clay stuff that you can't dig in. You can't get a trap bed in. And I mean, besides being miserable on you, when you go through all that work, there's just not hardly any animals there. So if you're going out there and you start hitting what I consider the bad land or the hard ground out there, you know, go a different direction or keep driving, you get out of it, because you're probably wasting your time to sit there and fight that when you get out there, because that's not where the animals are at. And when we were in that high desert, I'm going to finish the show on this just to let you know how many coyotes are out there. when we went out there, we were setting the tanks in the what used to be fields of some kind and road intersections and all the classic style kout locations that you would think you would need to do. And we were driving to get to these. I mean, and on those old desert roads, I mean, you go 65 miles an hour. And we're cruising down through there. Well, towards the end of the trip, before we went up to the mountain, we started setting traps off the odometer because, you know, we've all read that in those old books. Every mile we got out, he'd go to one side and go to the other side of the road. We'd put a set in real quick, get back in the truck, and go down the road. Now, you can get a lot of traps out that way. I'm here to tell you, because you're not looking for anything. You just get out and you do it. And what amazed me in the high desert of New Mexico doing that, going off of odometers and going off of locations, our catch didn't vary. We had the same average going off the odometers we did going after the actual coyote location, which told me out in that desert, they just wander around like the cats do in South Texas. So don't get wrapped up on your locations. If you see a lot of tracks, set your traps. If you want to go off the odometer, you're not going to like it right at the beginning because you're going to think you're going to be screwing up because you're just sitting in the middle of nothing. You'll be catching stuff and you'll be absolutely amazed. Now, some of the tanks out there, we did have better luck that actually had water with the windmills than any other place, because some of those would be worth 8 or 10 coyotes because they would be coming in because there was a lot more rabbits and stuff that would stay around those tanks. Some of the other fields and stuff looked really good, and I never could figure out what they were trying to grow, but it just didn't pan out that well. But there's a lot of game in New Mexico, and there's a lot of ground for a trapper that's got a little fire in his belly to go out there and get. And that's the keys. You got to have that fire in your belly if you want to go make money. If you're just going for a vacation, man, go to the high deserts out there where you got soft beach sand. No worries in the world, and just trap as little or as hard as you want to, and you will have a great time. That I promise you. When you come in, you can get you some of that good New Mexican food, get you some good sleep, and go at it the next day. And it's New Mexico and Louisiana. I like going to Texas a lot because I can make a lot of money there, and I like South Texas. But Louisiana and New Mexico, to me, have more of a fondness in my heart than a lot of places I've ever been, because the memories and the terrain and the people and the culture, all that was just so different than anything I've been around. And it's just absolutely knock you on the ground beautiful a lot of times. And if you're just trapping at home, you don't get to that. That's part of the beauty of going out of state trapping. Go see the world that you live in, and you'll have more respect for the animals you catch, and you'll learn so much more by going to different places. But just, you know, we have freedom in this country, so why not use it? Well, I'm going to go ahead and stop this show this week. Now, next week, there won't be a show. I'm going to be at the PA show, and there's just no time with me trying to get everything ready for that and our lure sales the way they are, for me to run another show and get it uploaded. So there's going to be a down week next weekend, then I'll get it rocking and rolling again, and I will try to get a bunch of interviews together to help me get through the time I'm going to be in Texas. So if you're still in season where you're trapping at and you still got some open ground, or if you don't, go out there and enjoy yourself, hammer some fur, you know, just enjoy what you're doing, man. It's the greatest thing in the world. So don't waste it. Don't waste the season, and don't waste this week. If it's still legal to be trapping where you're at, and I'll see you next week on Trapping Across America. Well, take that back. I'll see you in 2 weeks on Trapping Across America.